From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. You are too kind. We got a great show for you today. Of course, actor Neil Patrick Harris, currently with the sitcom How I Met Your Mother, will be joining us to play our game. We might think of something else to ask him about besides what's Britney Spears really like, but I doubt it. Stick around, find out. This week, our show actually made some news for once. The Peabody Awards are given every year to award excellence and innovation in broadcast media. And this year, apparently, they decided to recognize something else. Namely us. Now, this is about as good as it gets in our world, unless they introduce a Best Mockery Pulitzer. So as you can imagine, we're very proud here at Wait, Wait. But now that we've gotten this recognition, there's really nothing more to work for. So if you think we've coasted before, you're going to be lucky if we even show up for work next week. So you have at least one more chance to win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT.
Thank God there was no drug testing.
Oh, Lord. So give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first caller. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Victoria Elin in Bradenton, Florida.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Bradenton?
Actually good today, but yesterday it rained so much.
Oh, I have such pity for you. It rained. We'll quickly airlift you an umbrella. Well, welcome to the show, Victoria. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author and the man to blame for everything you might find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Tom.
Also say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Kiri.
And next, say hello to a television personality, and we love this, the star of the cabaret smash hit Mo Rocca Across America, playing at New York's Birdland on April 28th, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Victoria.
Victoria, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will start us off, as he almost always does, with three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
Here is your first quote.
Oh, that's so dainty. That is such a dainty release.
That was Joe Scarborough, host of MSNBC's Morning Joe. He was one of many in the media to criticize the way somebody bowled. Who threw a gutter ball this week on the campaign trail?
Oh, Lord, poor Barack.
Oh.
Barack Obama.
Yes, Barack Obama. So, tell the truth. You never thought you'd be nostalgic for the days when we judged presidential candidates by who would make the best drinking buddy, did you? Maybe it's that we're shallow. Maybe it's just there's nothing really going on until the Pennsylvania primary. But Barack Obama's poor form as a bowler dominated the political news this week. Some suggested that Obama's low score, 37 over 7 frames, at a bowling alley in Altoona, Pennsylvania, would be his Dukakis in a tank moment. The Clinton campaign pointed out that Hillary has been in her life an accomplished bowler with her own ball and shoes. They did say this. They also said, they said that, they put that out, you know. They also said, of course, that she once scored a 274 under sniper fire in Bosnia. Big controversy. The Obama campaign, true to form, trying to control the damage, announced that their candidate would deliver next week a major address in which, with soaring rhetoric, he would attempt to reconcile the historical American division between the jocks and the nerds.
You know, he just needed those little gutter bumpers, you know?
Yeah, I know. He would have done much better. They say, and I say this as a proud former member of my high school bowling team. True fact.
Ooh,
true
that
fact.
That got you into Harvard.
You bet, ma'am.
Peter, don't ever tell anybody that again.
No! Look, that was the highlight of my athletic career.
Somebody give Victoria a pick.
Oh, yeah, you know. No, what they say, of course, is if you're a good bowler, that's a sign of a steady eye and a strong hand and a careful approach. If you're a great bowler, it's the sign of a wasted life.
Well, you know, the funny thing is he had great form. He just had no follow through. And I don't know, maybe that's something we ought to worry about.
Yeah. He bowls much better in caucuses.
That's when the pins get together and decide whether to fall down or not.
Yeah, well, he bowls really great in those states that don't matter.
Right. All right, very good. Here is your next quote. It is from the 1954 yearbook at Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia.
It was a fateful 3 years ago that Punk first crossed the threshold of the high school. His magnetic personality has won him many lifelong friends, but as magnets must also repel, some have found him hard to get along with.
That was the yearbook's farewell to a certain student who went on to all kinds of adventures, both good and bad. Who was known to his high school friends, those that he had, as Punk?
Punk?
Punk. His other nicknames in high school were Nasty and McNasty.
Mm. Oh, John McCain.
John McCain. The putative GOP candidate went on a biographical tour this week. He tried to reintroduce himself to voters as someone slightly less crazy than they had thought, but still fun. One of his stops was his old high school, where, according to the yearbook, his hobbies were indignation, rage, and fist fights during lunch. We exaggerate, not by much. McCain himself says he had, quote, a chip on his shoulder in those days, and as we said, his other nicknames were Nasty and McNasty.
McNasty.
McNasty. McCain addressed the current students at the school about the lessons he had learned, but he was challenged by a young woman who wondered if she and her classmates had been forced by their teachers to attend what was, in essence, a political event. McCain responded by charging over and dumping her book bag on the floor. Very good. Here is your last quote.
Recession is possible.
This week, the R word finally passed the lips of whom?
It must be Bush.
No, somebody far more important than the president.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus?
That was redemption.
Actually, no, it's true. He has a new show on MSNBC right after. Jesus. Like, Jesus is mad money.
Yeah. Exactly.
And at the end of the first episode, he resurrects Bear Stearns.
Bernanke, all right. Ben Bernanke, very good. Yeah, the entire job of chairman of the Federal Reserve is to say soothing, inscrutable things, even as people lose their homes and stockbrokers fall like a gentle rain onto the streets of New York. So when the man himself, Ben Bernanke, actually says the word recession, it doesn't mean the bottom is about to fall out. It means it fell out 2 weeks ago. And we're all treading air like Wile E. Coyote after running off a cliff, right? Not that we needed to be told. The problems have even reached into the supermarket as food prices are shooting through the roof. All the people who usually hoard gold are instead stuffing their mattresses now with organic cantaloupes from Whole Foods. Carl, how did Victoria do in our quiz?
She was funny, Peter. Not only that, she had three correct answers. So, Victoria, I'll be doing a message on your home answering machine.
Victoria, thank you so much for playing with us. It was great to have you.
Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, an important service provider is going to try to make your experience with them more serene, calm, mellow, with low lighting, mood music, and friendly glances. Who's getting all romantic on us?
Probably not United Airlines.
No, but you're close.
Oh, yeah, the TSA.
Exactly, the TSA, the security people.
Yeah. Wow.
Pretty soon, travelers...
How soon?
Well, I'll tell you. Pretty soon, travelers at the Baltimore International Airport will encounter the newer, mellower security checkpoint with the low mauve lighting, the mood music playing, friendly, newly trained staff. They now believe, the TSA does, the Transportation Security Administration, they believe that all the stress and bright lights and chaos of your typical security station is actually unsafe. It makes it harder for them to, you know, look for dangerous people. So they're going to go all bachelor pad on us.
Is this going to include a place to sit down and put your shoes back on?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A little cocktail lounge, very mellow. Now, if the pilot program in Baltimore works out, it might spread everywhere. Now, this is exclusive to us. Wait, don't tell me. We went to the TSA testing facility. And we have brought back, this is exclusive recording of the new TSA experience. This is what it sounds like.
Please take off your shoes and have your boarding passes ready. Don't forget to remove all laptops from their cases. Hey, baby.
Oh, bring out the wand. Bring out the wand.
Male assist aisle 3.
Right now it's time for the Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Richard Solomon calling from Pleasantville, New York.
How are you, Richard?
Very good, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Wasn't Richard Solomon the name of the guy who co-starred with Paris Hilton in that tape?
Rick Solomon.
Rick Solomon. You ever call yourself Rick, or do you not do it?
My family does, yes, but my name is all O's. His has an A in there somewhere.
I see. Okay, because you don't want people to be confused.
No.
Good. All right, well, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game, Richard, in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Richard's topic?
That's all, folks.
Registered trademark.
Mel Blanc, if you can hear us, we're sorry. Whatever you do, do not mess with the cartoon industry, because they will come down on you like an anvil dropped from a high building. This week we read about someone who got a little too close to infringing on a cartoon's turf. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of animators taking their claims to court. Choose that real story. You'll get Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm all set.
All right. First, let's hear from Tom Beaudet.
Dr. George Pink, a research fellow at Oxford's Human Intelligence Project in Great Britain, altered the DNA of brain proteins in laboratory mice and created one with the brain power of the average English toddler, the equivalent of an American fifth grader. A lecture tour featuring Dr. Pink and the gifted mouse solving puzzles and ripping through complicated mazes has been playfully named Pinky in the Brain Plan to Take Over the World Tour. A reference, of course, to the Steven Spielberg Warner Brothers cartoon series Pinky in the Brain, which features a diabolical genius lab mouse and his idiot sidekick. Warner Brothers is not amused and has sued Oxford University to have all references to their copyrighted materials stricken from the lecture promotional materials. No word yet from the John Steinbeck estate on the ever-cheeky Dr. Peek's plans to reframe it as George and Lenny's Mice and Man Show.
Pinky and the Brain getting mad at a scientist in Britain. Your next story of someone taking liberties with a cartoon comes from Kiri O'Connor.
You know the classic mismatches. Fred Flintstone versus Dino, or Top Cat versus Officer Dibble. But in Britain, the latest uneven battle pits a tiny sports bra maker against the cartoon titan Hanna-Barbera. That's right, it's Scooby-Doo versus Booby-Doo. Ruh-roh! Lawyers for Warner Brothers are coming down like creepy old guys in latex masks on two British entrepreneurs trying to copyright the Booby-Doo name. And just like a Scooby-Doo cartoon, the mystery isn't solved yet. The scrappy Brits vow to fight on in the bra wars. Of course, this may also put a kibosh on the Josie and the Pussycats line of thongs. As Shaggy would say, zoinks!
The Booby-Doo gets squashed by Scooby-Doo. Your last story of an animated legal brief comes from Mo Rocca.
You'd think that former Senator Fred Thompson would have enough to worry about rebuilding his career after the collapse of his presidential campaign earlier this year. But now, tapes of his stump speech and his very particular cadence are being examined by lawyers for the estate of Foghorn Leghorn for copyright infringement. The most incriminating passage concerns immigration. I say, we've got a problem with illegals. I say, get away from here, undocumented workers, you're bothering me. Lawyers are demanding a retroactive licensing fee from the campaign. Thompson, reached on the set of The Dukes of Hazzard 2, Wrath of Hog, offered a vigorous defense. I say, I was imitating Yosemite Sam.
All right, then. Which of these is the real story? From Tom Baudet, how the makers of Pinky and the Brain don't like a scientist who's marketing himself under that name. From Kerry O'Connor, how the owners of Scooby-Doo don't like a new bra called Booby-Doo. Or from Mo Rocca, how the owners of the old Foghorn Leghorn character are upset with Fred Thompson for apparently imitating the cocky rooster. Which of these is the real story of a copyright infringement in the cartoon world?
Oh, boy. I think I'm going to go with number two, the Scooby-Doo, Booby-Doo story.
The Scooby-Doo, Booby-Doo.
Yeah.
It just sounds good, doesn't it? All right. All right, so your choice then is Curious Story of the Booby-Doo. Now, we are so pleased because in order to bring you the real story, we were actually able to speak to the cartoon character himself. Here he is.
Like, man, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
That was Scott Innes, who is the voice of both Scooby-Doo and Shaggy, reacting to the story of the sports bra named the Booby-Doo. Congratulations, Richard. You got it right. Well done.
Thank you very much.
You're into point for Curie. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Thank you so much for playing with us today.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scooby! Hey, Scooby!
Where are you?
Over here.
And now the game where we invite famous people on to answer questions about obscure things. It's called Not My Job. The only thing tougher than having a successful career as a child actor is surviving it. Neil Patrick Harris did that somehow, first becoming famous as the boy doctor of the early 90s TV show Doogie Howser, M.D., and then going on to a varied career in film and TV and on the Broadway stage. He joins us now from the set of his latest TV show, the sitcom How I Met Your Mother. Neil Patrick Harris, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So,
it is a true honor to be here. I'm a huge fan of the show and listen to it every week.
Well, that's so great. We're a big fan of yours. Now, Neil, you played Doogie Howser, M.D., brilliant teenage doctor from the age of like 16 to 19 in your own real life. And then afterwards, you were going to go on and continue to have a career. Did you have to work once that series ended and you were continuing your career as an actor to really actively shed that image? Did you say, okay, how am I going to show the world I'm not really Doogie Howser?
Not intentionally. I didn't want to jump onto another TV show, and I sort of steered clear of medical roles.
Yeah. Well, we've seen you do some stuff, like you played a serial killer on Law & Order Criminal Intent once.
Yes, I've done a whole slew of made-for-TV telefilms where I was a serial arsonist. I hacked up my parents with a wood maul once. Good times.
Yeah. Really, so how did you get from, gosh, we need a fresh-faced young genius to, we need a psychopath, call Neil Patrick Harris?
I don't know, but I enjoy that aspect of a career.
You also
playing the regular, nice, average guy gets boring. It's fun to play the character roles.
And I think of particularly your live theater roles. You played, for example, the very sort of sexually dangerous MC in that Broadway revival of Cabaret.
That was great.
Oh, I know. But in that situation, your fans can meet you. Did anybody come up to you and they're like, Doogie, how could you?
Some demented ones, yeah. No, the theater's been super helpful too. Doing a TV show is really exciting because lots of people get to see it, but it's a bit limiting because you're only sort of acting from the waist up all the time. So getting a chance to go and do cabaret where you're stomping around and you'd be so full body with bruises and tattoos and being kind of naughty was really freeing for me at the time.
Yeah, that's why I'm dressed the same way right now.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm just wearing suspenders, no shirt. I've got lipstick on, eyeshadow.
Glitter on your nipples?
You bet. One of your more famous moments was your cameo in the movie Harold and Kumar Go
yes.
to White Castle.
Yes.
And for people who haven't been lucky enough to see it, these two characters are trying to spend the whole movie trying to get to White Castle. And they're driving through New Jersey, I think. And
yes.
and there is Neil Patrick Harris. And they pick you up and you're in their car and you are crazed on ecstasy. And desperate, I can't even quote you, of course, because this is public radio, to, shall we say, find some women now. So you're sort of this drug-addled, sex-crazed maniac.
Yeah, I steal their car and go to a strip club.
Yeah. And now, did they propose this to you? They said, Neil, we want you to be yourself, but you'll be a drug-addled, sex-crazed maniac lunatic? And you were like, great.
I heard through the grapevine that they'd written this movie and that I was in it and that I had to call my attorneys and make it stop, that it was a bad thing. And I read it and thought it was hilarious. It was.
Oh, really? So really, you first heard about, like, you know, Neil, we have to stop these people. They're defaming you. And you were
yeah,
like, oh,
I heard a friend was auditioning for a different part in the movie and said, do you know about this movie that you're in?
Well, what was their plan? They hadn't told you about it? Are they just going to hire somebody else to play Neil Patrick Harris?
No, I guess Fred Savage passed. There's a sequel coming out in a couple weeks, actually, where I'm on mushrooms this time.
That's great.
And take them to a house of ill repute.
I got to ask you about this. This is a famous incident in your career about 2 years ago. Some tabloids, some news were spreading rumors that you were gay, and you did this remarkable thing. You basically said to the world, yeah, I am, so what? And became really a hero to a lot of people, gay and straight, all around the world, just for being yourself, when that didn't seem allowed. And I wanted to ask, do you think of yourself as a pioneer in that way, as a hero? Because that's how a lot of people see you.
How dare you bring that up?
Peter, that was a huge mix-up, actually.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
I don't know. It was incredibly intense at the time because I was reading all of these things that were I was apparently being quoted as saying, and it seemed a little witch-hunty, so I don't know.
Well,
it was kind of a non-issue to me at the time. And, you know, I had a boyfriend then, and we had been together for a while, so there was no real scandal. And all of a sudden, for me, it felt like my life was very scandalous, and that's what I wanted to avoid.
I got to say, it was kind of in the gay stereotype to say witch hunty. I just want to... We kind of knew then, I'm just saying. Well, Neil Patrick Harris, we're just delighted to have you with us, and we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Excuse me, do you have Prince Albert in a can? Yes? Well, then, could you tell me what the heck that is?
It was April Fool's Day this week, of course, which meant we had to endure a series of pranks and gags in the news. For example, Hillary Clinton suggesting that she and Obama settle their nomination battle with a bowling match. Ha-ha. It turns out... that pranks and hoaxes, like everything else, aren't as good as they used to be. This week, we came across a list in the Times of London of the greatest hoaxers in British history. Answer 2 out of 3 questions about these hoaxes correctly. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's Hand in Marriage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big stuff.
And don't get excited, Neil. It's for the listener.
Oh.
Carl, who is Neil Patrick Harris playing for?
Neil is playing for Ben Balser of Gonzales, Louisiana.
Ready to go?
I'm ready. I'm nervous.
All right. Now, this would be cool. You've handled worse than this. Here we go. One of the great pranksters of the 19th century in England was the author Theodore Hook. He was once insulted, or he thought so anyway, by a certain Mrs. Tottenham. So how did he extract his elaborate revenge? Did he A, hire someone to impersonate a cow on her farm, and then shock her into a faint when the cow spoke? B, did he arrange for wagon loads of coal, multiple pianos and shipments of furniture, and the Duke of Gloucester all to arrive at her house on the same day? Or C, did he put on a dress and wig and convince her that he was her long-lost daughter and live with her for a month before revealing the truth?
Wow. But I'm going to say C.
You're going to say C. No, the answer, in fact, was B.
Ah.
It was called the Berners Street hoax. It was the mother of all, you know, pizza delivery gags. It took Mr. Hook 6 weeks to arrange, but on the same fateful day in 1809, dozens of carts filled with coal, furniture, pianos, pipe organs, and other merchandise showed up in Mrs. Tottenham's house, with payment due, of course. And at the same time, the Duke of Gloucester, the Lord Mayor of London, the Governor of the Bank of England, and the Chairman of the East India Company all showed up as well at the door, expecting to meet somebody equally important.
Wow, that's right. A good one.
You have two more chances. Here we go. Mary Toft became briefly famous in the late 18th century in England for her amazing apparent ability to do what? A, give birth to a litter of rabbits. B, converse intelligently with shrubbery. Or C, remove her own head and carry it around in a basket.
I'm going to say C again.
Remove her own head and carry it around in a basket.
Come on, Peter, do me right.
Sadly, the answer was A, she gave birth to a litter of rabbits.
What?
It's true. It's unclear why Mrs. Toft decided to pretend she had given birth to the first rabbit, but the attention she got made her keep doing it.
Oh.
She produced a total of 17 rabbits, some of them, quote, born under the supervision of some credible, if not particularly observant, physicians.
Mm. She must have been sleeping with Harvey.
Well, this is terrible.
Terrible. Well, you have one more chance here. Let's see if you can get something right. Another great prankster was Horace DeVere Cole. He was a friend.
Ah, yes.
You know about him? He was a friend of Virginia Woolf's, early 20th century London. He enjoyed a reputation as a rake and a prankster. One of his great pranks was which of these? A, successfully pretending to be the American president Woodrow Wilson and getting a state banquet at the palace out of it. B, giving a group of bald men carefully selected theater tickets so their heads spelled out an obscenity when seen from above. Or creating, this is C, creating a fake fossil mermaid leading to speculation that humans evolved directly from fish.
Last one's boring.
Oh, excuse me, Mo.
Well, no, I'm trying to help.
Tell me A again.
A was successfully pretending to be the American president Woodrow Wilson and getting That's a state cool. banquet out of it. Because who knows what he looks like?
Yeah.
All right, I'll say A.
You're going to say A?
The bald thing is so fun.
The bald thing is so funny. Should I say B?
I don't know. It's not up to me.
At this point, just have fun. It doesn't matter.
That's true. I've already lost.
What do you think?
Point,
A or B?
I'll
or
go B. I'm going to go B.
You're going to go B? You're right. That's what he did. They had no idea what was going on, but if you were sitting up in the upper galleries looking down, you were apparently shocked. Carl, how did Neil Patrick Harris do in our quiz?
Neil needed at least two correct answers to win for Ben Balser, but he just had one correct answer.
Well, Neil, I'm sorry.
Bummer.
I know, but it was great to have you on the show. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm thrilled.
Neil Patrick Harris is one of the stars of How I Met Your Mother, which airs Mondays on CBS. You can also see him in the upcoming Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay. It opens on April 25th. Neil Patrick Harris, thank you so much.
Thank you,
what a great guy. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
You will.
This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Tom Baudette, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl is going to demonstrate his literary prowess in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kiri, scientists are excited about the impending activation of the Large Hadron Collider, a powerful particle accelerator that might solve some of the basic mysteries about the structure of the universe. But two experts in nuclear physics have sued in federal court hoping to delay its activation. They're concerned that the Large Hadron Collider might do what?
Oh, this is the thing in Switzerland.
Yes.
That it might destroy the entire world.
That's right.
That would, like, be a big oops.
The LHC will be one of the most powerful particle accelerators ever built. It will fire protons with up to 7 trillion electron volts, which we are told is a lot. It's supposed to show us what the universe was like just instants after the Big Bang. But according to a man named Walter Wanger, who was once a nuclear safety officer for the U.S. government, it might also create a mini black hole, which will gobble up the Earth like Bill Clinton engulfing a Big Mac. Or, they say, another possibility, we might get lucky, and it could create a particle called a strangelet, which would then instantly transform our planet into a cold, dark, dead lump, which would be bad. But as a physicist,
strangelet sounds kind of nice, though. It sounds like a webkin.
It does. Sounds like a backup dancer. Why? Yeah.
A strangelet is a bizarre kind of particle that has a weird existence, and it will change all the particles around it to the same kind. So all of a sudden, all the matter on Earth will convert to this stuff instantly.
Strangelet in the night.
Yeah.
Everything's gone dark. Strangelet in the night.
The physicists who are in charge of this multi-billion-dollar thing, they say it's not going to happen. We've done the math. We've checked the numbers. And it won't happen. And look at it this way. Even if it does, at least then the Democratic primary would be over.
Yeah, I know. You think about it, and it actually will solve a lot more problems than it costs.
Absolutely.
The entire point of this thing is to find out what the world was like right seconds after. Milliseconds after
what?
The Big Bang, I could tell them.
What was it like?
It was a little dark, but, you know.
But starting to look better.
Yeah.
You know? Looking
things
up.
Things are improving.
Yeah.
God,
There were no good restaurants.
Yeah.
Mo, great news for the squeamish. According to a new medical study, doing what sometimes does more harm than good and therefore is no longer recommended. It's a medical study.
It's Heimlich maneuver? No, it's a what is something that it's CPR?
You're getting closer.
It's the mouth to mouth.
Mouth to mouth resuscitation. Yeah, okay. Very good.
I love mouth to mouth.
It's a staple of comedy movies. Some ugly or smelly guy grabs his chest, falls to the ground, and a bystander, knowing he's got to put his mouth right on top of the victim's, hems and haws and says, "But we hardly know each other." Apparently, this happens in real life. People are just too weirded out by mouth to mouth contact to do it, even when the person seems to need it. Turns out an extensive study in Japan of people who have had coronary events in public with bystanders, it proves that somebody who has a heart attack there in public will actually do better if the Good Samaritan just pumps on the chest in a classic way rather than give the kiss of life as well. However, it also means, so you don't have to do that, which is good news, it also means, though, that all those people who are following around Jessica Alba hoping for a myocardial infarction can hang it up.
I just do that pumping thing with my foot because I don't really like touching people.
Now,
she's a germ of that, right?
Pretty soon you're just going to be standing there going, "Oh, feel better." Carrie, a group in California has proposed a ballot initiative, quite seriously. They want to rename a sewage treatment plant after whom?
A sewage treatment plant. Let's see, who would be like not, well, I guess this would be somebody that you, well, it would have to be kind of a mixed message, wouldn't it? I'm thinking President Bush.
Yes. If this initiative passes by law, this water treatment plant would become the George W. Bush sewage facility. This is a movement, the presidential, they call themselves the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco. They're composed of a group of well-known social activists and pranksters, but they're serious. They say they want to change the name of the local water treatment plant to honor President Bush with what they call a, quote, appropriate and enduring legacy.
Oh, God.
They predict that if this passes, visitors will come from all over to the plant to watch the sewage being partially cleaned and then dumped in a tank marked "Mission Accomplished." Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website, which is at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows, usually here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago's Loop, or you can visit the NPR shop to pick up your very own Wait Wait tchotchkes in time for Passover. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Tom Smith from Westfield, New Jersey.
Westfield, New Jersey.
Indeed.
A lovely place, not far from where I grew up. I have family there. How are things in Westfield?
They're pleasant and suburban.
They are like that. That's pretty much all there is to say. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here's your first limerick.
I look at my plate and say, ew, this food has a god-awful hue. I can't eat this meal. It looks oddly teal. I have glasses that make food look
blue.
Yes. So let's say you have trouble losing weight. The problem is not with your appetite, but with your eyewear. The Japanese company has come up with a new pair of dieting sunglasses. They have special blue lenses. You wear them, you look at your food, it all looks blue. Everybody knows there's no blue food in nature, so it seems repulsive. Dulls your appetite, triggers all your yuck sensors. It might work. We don't know. There are doubts it'll work in America because Americans have yet to see a food too disgusting for them to try to eat it. I'm willing to try that. Maybe that's what Bono's been doing all these years. Maybe that's why he's been wearing those sunglasses. Think about it.
You'd have to put a hose clamp to them to keep them on your head. Wouldn't you just take them off?
Tom, are you ready for your next limerick?
Yes.
Ready. It is.
We cops caught our man. We're a Twitter. It's been 2 years now. He is no quitter. The cat box he'd scoop, then he'd start up his coop and drive around town flinging.
It must be litter.
It is. Residents of Scranton, Pennsylvania can rest easy tonight because the notorious dirty kitty litter dumper is finally off the streets. For 2 years, a man named Donald Klenz allegedly fouled the streets of Scranton by dumping hundreds of bags of dirty kitty litter in various locales. Diabolical genius. Police in Scranton realized, even though their perp was wily, he had a pattern. They set up a sting operation in camouflage in the woods. Late night stakeouts in unmarked cars. Officers finally caught Klenz mid-fling. They hauled him off to jail. They are now seeking 8 to 9 cats for aiding and abetting him.
So when Hillary Clinton drove into Scranton 2 weeks ago, that wasn't sniper fire.
No. She did claim she had to duck, though.
Now that's a reason to duck.
All right, very good. Here's your last limerick.
We know Botox users are vain. Now it seems they are slightly insane. With the drug in their skull, their mind might grow dull. Cause some poison seeps into
the brain.
Ugh. Right. Botox users, beware. Sure, the toxin might make your brow as smooth as a baby's bottom, but you might be in for a different kind of brain freeze. According to a study in the Journal of Neuroscience, researchers have discovered that Botox injected into the forehead may migrate and take up residence in the brainstem, disrupting nerve activity. Many dermatologists who give Botox treatments said they were not concerned by the findings. While on the one hand, you have permanent brain damage. On the other hand, hasn't hurt Jessica Simpson.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had a perfect game, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Tom wins our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
I give my best to Westfield. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place. Peter, Tom Beaudet, and Kerry O'Connor each has 3 points. Mo Rocca has 2.
All right, Mo, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Yeah. Fill in the blank. On Friday, John McCain and Hillary Clinton went to Memphis for the 40th anniversary of the murder of blank.
Martin Luther King.
Right. Fighting stopped in southern Iraq when Muqtada al-Sadr called a ceasefire after consulting the government of blank.
Iraq?
No, Iran. When his U.S. tour begins this month, blank plans to visit a synagogue in acknowledgement of Passover.
Pope Benedict.
Yes, very good. Accusing him of planning suicide attacks on Tuesday, China called blank a, quote, wolf in monk's robes.
The Dalai Lama.
Right. Motorists in Florida were surprised to see a blank, quote, strolling leisurely along the shoulder of busy State Road 7.
An alligator?
Yes, a 400-pound alligator. NBC announced that on Monday, Kathy Lee Gifford will return to morning television as one of the co-hosts of blank.
The Today Show.
Right. Dith Pran, the former New York Times photographer whose story became the award-winning film blank, died at age 65.
The Killing Fields.
Right. Three teens in Victoria, Canada learned the hard way that if there's one business you don't run out on without paying for their services, it's the local blank.
They ditched before they paid
the...
They didn't pay their gondolier.
No. They didn't pay at the local photo portrait studio. According to the owner of Tony's old-time portrait studio in Victoria, the three teens spent 40 minutes dressed up like people in the Old West. They giggled, they laughed, they had their photos taken. Then they changed back into their clothes and then, quote, took off like a bat out of hell, unquote. Police say it's a tough case. They don't know how they can catch the three teens unless somehow they can find some way to identify them.
That's
Carl,
great.
How did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Mo has the lead.
Very well done. Thank you. We have flipped a coin. Tom has elected to go second. So, Tom, here we go. Fill in the blank. On Monday, Alfonso Jackson announced he would step down as the Secretary of Blank on April 18th.
HUD.
Yes, Housing Urban Development. President Bush got support for a missile defense system in Europe at the summit of blank members this week.
The NATO.
Right. Just days after Aloha Airlines shut down, blank declared bankruptcy and canceled all flights.
ATA.
Right. After restrictions were lifted, people in blank lined up to buy DVD players and other electronics.
Venezuela.
No, Cuba. A British Star Wars fan who calls himself Jedi Master Jamba Hihole was attacked in his own backyard by a blank.
A stormtrooper.
Close. A guy dressed as Darth Vader.
Oh, no. Well, no, that's... I think I get a ding. He's actually a stormtrooper, Uber stormtrooper. Well, he got the helmet. All right.
Darth Vader is a fallen Jedi, where stormtroopers are clones, and it's just not the same. Moving on. Moving on. Because his latest surgery did not, sadly, restore his ability to speak, blank will not resume reviewing movies on his syndicated TV show.
Ebert.
Right, but we do welcome him back to the Sun-Times. With its win this week, blank became the first reality TV show to get a Peabody Award.
Runway.
Yeah, Project Runway. Right.
Police
in Madrid caught a burglar in a funeral home who had tried to elude them by blanking.
I'm going to say hiding in a casket.
Exactly right. Playing dead. Police responding to the break-in at the funeral home weren't fooled by the burglar stretched out pretending to be dead in the viewing room. Tip number one, dead people generally don't breathe. Tip off number two, they're usually not dressed like burglars. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
All right. So how many, then, does Kiri need to win?
All of them.
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Ready to play? Here they go. This is for the game.
Okay.
You're going to do it.
Okay.
When asked about Bill Richardson's endorsement of Barack Obama, blank exploded and yelled at a group of superdelegates.
Bill Clinton.
Right. For the first time since taking power, Robert Mugabe lost control of the parliament in blank.
Zimbabwe.
Right. Testifying before Congress, top executives from the 5 biggest blank companies said they are not to blame for high prices.
Oil.
Right. Barack Obama said that he would offer blank a position in his administration to address the problem of global warming.
Al Gore.
Right. An off-duty policeman in New Zealand didn't let the fact he was blank stop him from pursuing the man who was stealing his car.
Buck naked.
Exactly right. With her 18th number one hit, Mariah Carey surpassed the Billboard chart record set by blank?
The King.
Elvis, yes. For the first time ever, all four number one seeds made the finals in the NCAA blank championship.
Oh, come on. Basketball.
Right. Basketball. The small plane pilot who botched a landing attempt on Lake Okeechobee in Florida said he was lucky to be alive after he accidentally blanked.
Landed on an alligator.
No, fell out of the plane.
Oh.
Anthony Bensivengo was still learning to fly the lightweight amphibious plane when he flubbed an attempt at landing, hit the buckle harnessing him into the seat, and flipped right out. His plane continued on for 2 miles before crash landing in the water. I did everything a pilot shouldn't do, he said. He cited the much-forgotten number one rule of flying, pilot must remain inside the plane at all times. Carl, how did Kiri do on our quiz?
She needed 7 to win outright, and Kiri had 7 correct answers.
Yeah.
So with 17 points, district champion is Kiri O'Connor.
Well done. Now, we heard earlier that John McCain's high school nickname was Punk, also McNasty. So we're going to ask our panelists in just a minute to tell us what other newsmaker nicknames from long ago will be revealed. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at Realtor.com. The Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at AnnenbergFoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, supporting ideas, sharing solutions, expanding opportunities, on the web at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our intern is Joe Feldman. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Our other engineers include Gary Yek, Lorna White, Lester Larchik, and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank, and this week, thanks to our Barry White impersonator, Dave Murray. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Acton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is and always has been, recently, Bada B. Now, panel, what other nicknames will we find out about Tom Baudet?
Well, now we know that President Bush saw a kindred soul when he looked into the eyes of Russian President Vladimir Putin, whose high school nickname was Vlad the Inhaler.
Well done. Kiri O'Connor.
Naomi Campbell, in high school they used to call her Detention Hottie.
And Mo Rocca.
Even as a chubby teenager, Al Gore was eco-conscious, favoring healthy roughage for snacks, hence his nickname, Al Greenhouse Gassy Gore.
Well, panel, if we learn about any of those nicknames, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Kiri O'Connor, and Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.